say something. We're missing a little baby. She's a little red-haired baby. She's very small. She's only like a year and a half old. And the parents can't find her anywhere. So if anyone knows or sees this little baby, please. We're looking for a little baby. She's about a year and a half old, and the parents can't find her anywhere. What? They found her? Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
In the presence of so many great souls who have a common focus of the Holy Name, we have an opportunity that their words and their chanting, infused with, in some cases, years, if not decades, of sacrifice and service, imbued with realizations, can touch our hearts and awaken some remembrance of our homeland. The interaction, coincidence of this 24-hour kirtan with the appearance of Radha Kund is not something that's very difficult to make a connection, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who desired and initiated the process that the Holy Name be spread to every town and village of the world, was somewhat anxious while touring Braj, and he heard the name Aristogram. He became very curious and very eager. Where is Radha Kund? Where is Shyamakund? Nobody knew at that time that the two little puddles in the paddock field called Gauri Kund and Krishna Kund were the eternal forms of Radha Kund and Shyamakund. Realizing this in his meditation in Samadhi, Mahaprabhu ran and took his bath in Radha Kund, offering his prayers, which are immortalized in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as that Kund, which is as dear to Krishna as is Srimati herself. So as we say there's no difference between Krishna and his holy name due to the absolute nature of everything spiritual, from our relative subjective experience, there is a difference by dint of Achintya Veda Aveda Tatva. The difference lying primarily in the realm of mercy. Because in serving the form of the Lord, who has mercifully appeared even in this Kali Yuga in his deity feature, which is the authorized process of worship for the Dwapara Yuga, the previous age, but is actually still effective as his sacrifice, as his meditation, in the context of Nam Sankirtan, without which the processes of meditation and sacrifice and deity worship have no spiritual merit, maybe some cultural value. But Harinam Sankirtan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, Srila Prabhupada's gift, is so all-inclusive that as a synergy it activates other processes of self-realization from other ages that are not even ineffective in and of themselves, but become very effective. And therefore, when we come together before the beautiful forms of Sri Sri Radhavindavan Chandra, Sri Sri Gauri Daya, Gopanathji, and Mata Sringadev and Jagannath, our chanting becomes enriched, and our deity worship becomes enriched. Everything becomes enriched by this synergistic. What does synergy mean? The combined effect is greater than the individual components all added together. Where does the additional potency come from? Krishna's mercy, which is embodied in the form of Radha Kund, which, continuing the same concept of Chintabeda Abheda Dattva, is non-different from Srimati herself. And yet there is a difference in terms of mercy, accessibility. Mercy abounds, but how to access, how to assimilate, how to integrate that mercy into the very core of our being, existence, and service, that requires humility. And for those who love to delve right into topics about Krishna and gopis and are very eager for such high concepts as Siddha Pranali, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told us our Siddha Pranali mantra is Trinadapi Sinichena, Tanadapi Sinishtana, Amanida, Manadena, Kirtani, Siddhari. So in the 10th canto, chapter 36, verse 16, it's actually twilight time, and Krishna is very eager for Rasalila. So he's proceeding to Govardhan, and as the call of his love through the song of his flute attracts the gopis away from all other obligations, and they're all traversing the path to Govardhan. Actually, we were telling this story once in, I believe it was 86 or maybe 89, just as we were approaching Radha Kund, these same words. It was twilight time and Krishna was eager for Rasa Lila. And all of a sudden, it wasn't like a peaceful cow, it was an infuriated bull. And just as if out of nowhere, comes charging. And he was complete with all the special effects. You know, he was snorting and his nostrils were blowing the dust in the air and he was bellowing, shaking his head and just attacking everybody. So the pilgrim party dispersed into shelter underneath the bus and up in the trees and in the local villagers' houses and I don't know who he was. He just terrorized the whole neighborhood, and then within a few minutes, he just disappeared. And people were a little suspicious looking at each other. Was that some special arrangement for this pilgrim party? And I said, I didn't know anything about it. But Vrindavan Das Thakur repeatedly reminds us that unto the hearts of those who are fortunate, the pastimes of the Lord are replaying even today. Sometimes we wonder. But therefore we should always be very respectful. So, anyway, going back further to 5,000 years, when the event originally happened in this kalpa, Krishna looked at this mad bull and he realized he was a demon. So he addressed him, "O most sinful one," to infer that there would be no sin in killing him. And then, as is typical of Krishna, he slapped his arms like a wrestler and said, "I'll fight with you, just to infuriate him." chivalrous spirit. But since Krishna really wants that everyone become humble, and that surrender doesn't ultimately mean at gunpoint when you're just overpowered by a superior force that you don't like, but is really a letting go of all your insecurities and fears and the things that embody them, out of trust in Krishna, which leads to love. So, after challenging, after accepting this challenge, and Krishna very casually just leaned over on Subha, very peacefully, just to infuriate the demon all the more, that Krishna would be so nonchalant in the face of such a terrorist, because there's great sense gratification in terrorizing others. There's tremendous ego involved in the illusion of controlling others in that way. So, Radhakund immortalizes the compassionate nature of Krishna, which is our only access to him. And the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are very fond of reciting, especially in this month of Kartik, when Damodar is the presiding deity, whose queen is Srimati, whose 25th quality is she keeps Krishna always under her control. And here lies the crux of the difference between the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and then the Mark Sampradaya, who also have such high esteem for the gopis' worship of Krishna and Srimati's love. But when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was taking devotees on parikrama of Radhakund, and there was another party of pilgrims there, apparently of Nimbark Sampradaya, a very aristocratic family, and they were doing Dandavat parikrama of Radhakund. And one of the devotees told Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, just see, they have such great devotion for Srimati. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, their angle of vision is different than ours. And the disciples didn't know just what he meant. So as usual, they move a little closer to see what his Gurudev is getting at. And he said that they have great devotion for Srimati Radharani because she's the most dearly beloved of Krishna. But the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have a slightly different angle of vision. Srimati Radhika is our goddess, our Ishtadevi, the object of our devotion. And Krishna is most dear to us because he is most dear to her. So Kartik is that month where we devote ourselves to topics and pastimes which nurture that Radha-dasya, and to those places which are blessed with the dust of the lotus feet of Srimati, like Radhakund, Sanket, Prem Sarovara, Nandagram Varshana. Sara means lake, but if you reverse the syllables, you have rasa. And what is the nature of this Radhakund? It makes that love of Krishna, which Srimati embodies, accessible to all. In this way, there is a difference between Srimati Radharani and her kund. That her kund is more accessible for us to circumambulate, to take bath, to take achma, to offer prayers. And Srila Rupa Goswami in his Sri Upadeshamrita, which in the short 11 verses covers the whole sojourn of coming out of the bodily concept and into loving relationships with the devotees of my 11th verse is eulogizing residents of Radhakund. And when Srila Prabhupada first translated and the devotees were ready to print, and they told Srila Prabhupada we're printing 10,000 copies of the British Shabbatism, said, no, 100,000. But Srila Prabhupada, 10,000 will more than cover as many devotees as we have in the movement. They said, this book leading to the glories of Radhakund is not just for our movement, it's for everyone to be distributed widely. And that's amongst the final instructions which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave Srila Prabhupada. They are on the banks of Radhakund. If you get money, first he said there will be fire in a very sorrowful mood, and then he told Srila Prabhupada. But he said so many times, if you ever get money, print books. So the unfailing influence of her purifying waters awards a love emerging from the depths of her heart unto those who bathe. In her kund. But it must be ascertained whether we are taking our bath or offering our prayers or having our darshan with proper humility, faith, and devotion. If so, our love will increase. If we have none, if we have some, it'll increase more. And if we actually have genuine love, we will become eligible for a prema similar to that which Srimati alone has for Krishna, which is shared by her associates. So, what is that difference then between Srimati and her kund, between Krishna Nam and Krishna's form? There's a difference in mercy alone. And it is that mercy, it is that prema for which Narada, Uddhava, are praying while residing at Radhakund. And it's the question only of faith and bhakti, whether we are actually perceiving properly. So, after Krishna, actually Krishna didn't kill Aristasura, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Yamaraj appeared on the scene and killed Arista. But it was kind of invisible, so it appeared as if Krishna did it. But still he attained liberation because he was killed in Krishna's presence. So, what does Arista represent in terms of Arnarjuna Vitti? In his Krishna Samhita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described the demonology of Arnarjuna Vitti in terms of how Krishna is liberating us from the unwanted things, the aparad, that which distances us from Radha, from the process of worship, and how that is made visible externally by his killing of the demons in Rajlila, and also another set from Mathura and Dwarka. So Arista, in the obvious sense, means pride in one's own religious observation, which leads to disrespect of the eternal principles of the Vaishnava Dharma. But in a subtler sense, it means Aristotelian influence, which means the deductive logic, the metaphysics, politics, ethics, morality, and empiric practices inspired by Aristotle, who emphasized more what is concrete over the abstract concepts of Plato. So, after the appearance of killing Aristophira, the gopis started speaking amongst themselves loudly enough that Krishna could overhear their words. They were saying, if a king commits a sin, then all the subjects of the kingdom have to suffer their share. So Krishna heard this and said, well, you know, Vritta wasn't really a bull. He was a demon. It just assumed that form. He said, but even Indra had to atone after killing Vritashura, who was in the form of a demon, but he was really a Brahmana. So Krishna, you have to perform atonement for this heinous sin. And then being addressed by the gopis in that way, Krishna became very humble. And he looked down at the ground and he said, what do you want me to do? He said, we've already discussed this with Purnamasi and Gargi. And their conclusion was that you have to travel to all the holy places in all the universe and take your bath in all the holy places. Otherwise, we cannot associate with you. Well, Krishna's humility didn't last very long because he didn't want to have to go and be separated from the Brijabasis. So he impudently told them that I'll bring them all here. And he stomped his heel into the earth, making a huge impression, called all the holy rivers who came and filled his kund. He took his bath and then he became even more arrogant. He said, now I have bathed in all the holy waters who I have summoned into my kund. We said, we don't see any holy personnel. This is ordinary water. And then Krishna spoke to the water. He said, introduce yourself. And then one by one, the holy rivers and holy tirthas emerged and introduced themselves before the gopis. So Krishna said, now you see that I've bathed in all the holy places. So if you think I have to atone, I already did. But you gopis sided with a demon, who although he was in the form of a bull, he was truly a demon, and you took sides with him. So you have incurred your reaction to his sin. But I will let you bathe in my kund, and you can thus be freed, and we can continue our association. Said, no, Krishna. And they discussed amongst themselves, Krishna's kund, Shama kund, had a very inauspicious beginning. Started with the killing of a bull. And then the way he struck his foot upon the earth was very disrespectful to Bhumi. And then he invested all his sinful reactions in that water, so we're not going to bathe there. We'll make our own. And it will be even more beautiful, and its fame will be renowned throughout the universes, even more than Krishna's. So Srimati broke her bangle, and all the gopis did the same. Within no time, they had excavated this huge impoundment. And Krishna was amazed at how hard they'd worked and how much they had achieved. And he said, that's a nice hole, but there's no water. So you can take water from my kund. No, Krishna, we're not going to take that water. We'll bring our own from Manasi Ganga in billions of pots. And she And Srimati told her friends, get to work, and they started. But Krishna, the perfection of servant of the servant, in most gentle and loving mood, could not bear the thought of seeing one drop of perspiration on the face of its beloved. So he motioned to the holy places, and one celestial personality who was entrusted to be their representative and spokesman emerged from Krishna's kund and fell down at the lotus feet of Srimati with tears flowing from his eyes and praising her. And he said, we have come here on the order of Lord Krishna to fill his kund and serve him, but we're not fulfilled. And she said, what do you want? And he said that our desires will only be fulfilled if we can enter your kund and render service to Krishna's beloved. So, glancing at her beloved from the corners of her eyes, Krishna accepted her consent, and in great earnest and eagerness, those holy rivers overflowed from Shyamakund and in no time filled Radhakund. The gopis took their bath, and by this time it was midnight, and then Rasa Leela resumed, and the daughter of Vrishabhana was like a streak of lightning moving to the rhythm of Krishna's heartbeat, and Shyamasundara like a dark cloud, and together at Radhakund and Shyamakund they inaugurated a shower of nectar which purified the whole world. And Krishna said, your kund will be even more famous than mine. And Srimati said that anyone who, with devotion, bathes here, prays here, or resides here, will become very dear to me. So in the heart of this month of Kartik is Bahulastami, Radhakundastami. The month when we sing Madhurastakam and perform the kind of sadhana which awakens and enriches the desire to serve and please Srimati. And we should understand theologically what this means. It means that we are jiva, insignificant, infinitesimal sparks of Krishna's glory. How much love, how much pleasure can we offer to Krishna? We're insignificant in every way. And conversely, how much of Krishna's unlimited love and mercy can we assimilate? Being jiva, tiny sparks, we're so crippled in our ability for relationships of any substance, depth, or meaning. And therefore, this very important Vaishnav theological principle of Ashraya Vigraha, the shelter-giving devotee, is not only our hope, but our great inspiration that in offering service to the Vaishnavas, who are imbued with the sentiment of Radha Dasa, that only Srimati can please Krishna completely and fully in every way. by offering service to her. Our insignificant offerings, as Srila Prabhupada said it in his typical, very simple and childlike way, don't offer a flower to Krishna, but put it in Srimati Radharani's hand. Let her offer it to Krishna. And she'll tell Krishna that this devotee is better than me. Please accept him. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna has to accept because he's not independent. And conversely, that when that offering is made from her hand, Krishna's love for her is distributed to all the parts and parcels of her bhakti, which we all have within our hearts. Bhakti is the expansion of Srimati Radharani. But it's dormant unless and until we develop an attitude of serving and pleasing these servants, of these servants. And then by her merciful glance, that love, that service attitude, which is part and parcel of her, awakens in our hearts. And as it grows, we are able to taste more and more Krishna's love. And in regards to Radha Kund, Srila Prabhupada said, this is a topic we cannot understand. It is beyond logic and reason in the three-dimensional realm. It is something to relish. And we have to be careful with that term, because it can be self-centered. Rather, we savor the remnants of what the Vaishnavas have given us in terms of appreciating the kund, which was so lovingly fashioned by the lotus hands of Srimati herself. So Kartik is that month in the presiding Lord is Damodar, who we glorify as being Atmaram and Aptakam. He has no desires to fulfill. But when he sees Srimati, he not only has desires to fulfill, but unlimited waves of desires arise within his heart. And this gives great hopes to his parts and parcels, who are also unlimited and have some unique special gift that Krishna wants from us. That's why it's so important not to get jealous of what others have to offer to Krishna, because in so doing, you'll miss what you have. And not to become proud. Because when you become proud, if you think you're better than anyone, then you'll think you have the right. And in some cases, some people seem to think they have the duty to judge others. And then you fall from the grace of Krishna. The highest perfection of this ideal is Raghunath Das Goswami, who left everything to take shelter of Mahaprabhu. And watching his pastimes unfolding in Puri, that spirit of Radhadas, and of course we're looking at it from the perspective of a sadhaka, whereas he's nitya-siddha, but he's going through this lila for our edification. This Radhadasya is awakening and growing. And then when Mahaprabhu left this world, entering into the form of Jagannath, Raghunath Das Goswami was so devastated, he gave up practically eating. Took shelter in Swarup Damodar. But Swarup Damodar could not live long in the separation of Mahaprabhu. The fire was burning and just consuming his very existence, and he shortly thereafter also departed. Raghunath Das was thinking, my life is finished. He gave up sleeping. He wanted to give up his life by entering the sea. But he thought, I should enter Jamuna or jump from Govardhan. So he traveled to Braj, and taking blessings from Rupa Sanatan, he found the Mahaprabhu and Srup Damodar are living as vividly as ever in their servants. And they showered so much affection upon him that it restored and revived his will to live and go on. But when Sanatana Goswami left this world, what was the nature of his kindness? And then when Rupa Goswami left, Raghunath Das was lamenting in such deep anguish, "All my hopes have failed one by one. All those great personalities I cling to, like columns for support, have all crumbled before me. Now I have only one shelter left, and this has given me great hope and inspiration." And in that mood, he took such exclusive shelter of Radhakund. And amongst his prolific prayers and writings, he revealed his heart's desire in his final composition, his last words, "O Srimati, I am yours only." He wanted her to hear him say it twice. "If you do not bestow your mercy upon me, now I am finished." So what does that mercy mean? The mercy of Radhakund, but to speak of Srimati, her assistance can give us Krishna at any time. He is their property. He is not independent. He's like a puppet who's bound and controlled by the strings of the Brijavasi's love. But where is Krishna complete? Srila Prabhupada objected to paintings of Krishna alone. He said, "That's not Krishna. Where are the gopis, the cows, at least Jamuna?" Krishna is complete in the form of Yugalakishore. So, and when Srimati is in her man, Leela, and she won't reciprocate with Krishna's attempts, the Parameshwara, controller of all controllers, the absolute truth, the sum of bodham, is falling at the feet of a 12 and a half year old girl, pleading, "Rupa Manjari, please intercede on my behalf that she again shows her favor towards me." So, we try to imagine, how can I, this arrogant jiva, attain the kind of humility described by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Look at Krishna. Or, when Krishna at Dwarka, because Srimati was cursed by her brother Sri Dama to spend 100 years in separation from Krishna. And to the day when that century ended and she was lying on the verge of death on the bank of Jamuna, and Chandana was reciting the glories of Siddhashram, which had no special interest until she mentioned the lake, the benefits, the benedictions of the lake at Siddhashram, where Kapila performs his asceticism and Lord Shiva lived with Parvati. And Srimati, attracted by the sound and the concept of Siddhashram, sat up, "What are the merits of bathing in that lake?" And Chandana told her that you never again have to experience separation from Krishna. "Let's go!" And in a moment, a long, beautiful colorful caravan of hope was traversing the hills and the plains and the deserts on the way to Siddhashram. And on the way, Srimati was seeing Krishna everywhere. The clouds were his complexion. The wind was his fickleness. The flowers were his delicate assemblages of love. But no, we're not there yet. Finally, when they reached, and she went to take bath, and Krishna and Dwarka was keeping track of every move. And they told the Jadus, we should go to Siddhashram. And they went. And they went to take their bath. But there was a line of little girls blocking the road, and the Jadu warriors, get out of the road. They said, no. What do you mean? They tried to push through. They couldn't advance. The indefeatable Jadus were pushed back by this line of 12-and-a-half-year-old girls. They said, the queen is bathing. You cannot come in until she's done. And the Jadu warriors, they had to retreat. When the queens are going, what queen? The queen of Vrindavan? And then, well, we've heard, then Satyabhama said, she's not the only beauty in all. Look at my beauty. My beauty incited Krishna to fight with Bhamashura, and my beauty made Krishna bring down the Parijata tree just for me. And she was raving about her beauty. But Rukmini has become more humble. And then finally, and they noticed that the whole forest and the sky and everything was moving in a wave-like fashion with a golden aura to the waves on the lake. And when that line of gopis opened and they saw them set for themselves, the queen of Vrindavan, those queens' pride was greatly humbled. But she spoke to them in such gracious, appreciative tones that she stole away their hearts. And Rukmini insisted, you come to my tent, let me be your maidservant. And she was serving Srimati with such affection. After which she'd come back to Krishna, and Krishna was awake, sitting up. And Rukmini told him that I put her to bed, she's not sleeping. Well, she appeared to be. Now, you must understand, these gopis, they're cowherds. They can't sleep if they don't have hot milk. So she's just pretending to reciprocate your services, but you don't understand the nature of cowherds. So Rukmini ran back and heated up some milk and served it to Srimati, and she went to bed again. Rukmini came back, and Krishna was lying down peacefully, and she went to massage his feet. She saw blisters. Shyam, what is this? I said, you don't understand. You didn't test the milk. It was too hot. It would have burned her. But I, standing in her heart, took the burns upon my feet. So you must be very careful and attentive in the finest details of your devotion. So then, you know, the queens were, it's a long story, we'll condense it for time's sake. They got inspired by the concept of having Rasa Leela since the Brijavasis were there. So they asked Krishna, can we do it? Well, you have to ask her. She said, yeah. So they had Rasa Leela on the bank of Siddhashram Lake. And by the proximity of the gopis, all the mudras, all the ragas, all the gestures, everything was revealed in their hearts, and they felt Braj Bhakti, something the queens had never experienced. And it was such a euphoric experience for them that afterwards they asked Krishna, was there ever a Rasa Leela like that in Vrindavan? Ask her. And then they knew they were going to be humbled in the most gracious manner. Srimati. And first of all, she praised all the queens for their participation in what each and everyone offered to the synergy of the event. But then she said, where were those characteristic features of the Gopa? His peacock feather and his flute. And then gradually and gracefully and sensitively she led to the conclusion, that Rasa Leela that you're so mesmerized by could not compare to a drop in the ocean of pleasure that Krishna finds in Braj. Those words were like a big wave coming out of the ocean and taking all the debris from the shore to a distant place. The queens felt. But understand, when you're talking about the pride of the queens of Dwarka or the pride of the gopis, but it's different than our kind of pride. It's a pride they manifest to give a very personal flavor for Krishna's pleasure. And they're not indifferent. So as Krishna began speeding up the sequence of events leading to his departure, and the jadus were seeing inauspicious omens in Dwarka, people were becoming quarrelsome, and poverty, and temper. What is good? So Krishna said, we should go to Prabhas to give charity, perform sacrifice. But Uddhava was wise. He understood, Krishna, you're in Dwarka. There's no need to go elsewhere to perform sacrifice. So, I understand, Krishna, that you're prepared to leave this world. I only have one request. Don't leave me behind. And Krishna said, you're staying along with Arjuna and Dwarka. And he told them, you have to go share with Badrinath and the sages of Badrikashram what you've experienced. Because Krishna first sent Uddhava to Braj to see the Vrijavasis in separation. And the only way he had to tell the Vrijavasis, I'll bring him back soon. So he had to bring Krishna back. But it wasn't just once. He brought Krishna from Braj, he brought him from Mathura, he was always bringing Krishna back. And in so doing, he was learning the ways of Vrindavan. And Krishna wanted him to stay in this world until Shukadeva took over to propound, first to Badrikashram, to the sages, and to the world. The glories of Braj Bhakti. So, this all progressed until, later on in Dwarka, when Krishna was so possessed by the Brijabhasis, he was completely absent-minded. And, in his sleep, and he would fall unconscious and just be calling out, Radhe, Radhe. And Madhu Mangal told Satyabhama, you have to become Radha for Krishna. And she said, how is that possible? So she told Madhu Mangal, she told Uddhava, you take Madhu Mangal and Purnamasi and Rohini and take Krishna back to Radha. He's not happy here. I want only his happiness. If that means I send him, if I have to take him, forfeiting my own children and palaces, it's becoming more clear every day. He's only happy in Vrindavan. So she told Uddhava, take him. So Dwarka drove while Uddhava held the umbrella. And just when they reached Brajbhumi, Rajmandalabhumi, Krishna would get off and Uddhava would have a package already. He would take off his royal attire and put on his gopa dhoti and sash cut the flute in his belt, put on the peacock feather. And Daruka knew the way by now, and they'd done it so many times. And as they're proceeding towards Nandagram, they heard sounds of joyous festivities. Was it a kirtan party? Was it a festival? Was it mantras? It was all these things, but it was more. It was the symphony of rapturous love emanating from each and every Brijabasi's heart, joining in symphonic harmony with all others, rising to the sky, purifying the atmosphere. It was Krishna's favorite sound, his favorite song, because it was welcoming him home. So, and then, you know, anyway, what Uddhava foresaw came to be, and it was with great agony that he took every step away from Dwarka, high into the Himalayas, not knowing how Yogamaya was bringing him on, going deeper and deeper and deeper into the anguish of Krishna's last words when he begged, please Krishna, take me. And Krishna said, no, you have to stay behind. But then that pain was so intense, his only shelter was remembrance of the first time he took Krishna's letter to Braj, and the many other times that Krishna would tell him, look, there's a letter from the Brijabasis, or now take me to Braj. So more and more his heart was vacillating between the anguish of separation from Krishna, which facilitated him taking deeper shelter, remembrance of Krishna's Braj Leela. And Krishna had explained to him that these are just two aspects of the one same truth, love. But then he was lamenting, no longer is Krishna going to call me, that now there's news, or take me to Braj, and he would rush in holding a letter. So Uddhava was just like walking into the Himalayas toward Badik Ashram, bereft of his heart and soul. And he would sometimes turn back, look south toward Braj, but it was far, far away, even was beyond even mind and thought. And gradually, gradually, the mood of the gopis overtook him more and more. And his burden grew very light, and his anguish turned to joy. And then he took shelter of his service to Krishna. Krishna told me to relay the news of his departure to Badinath and the sages. But then he understood that what Krishna really wanted him to convey to Badinath and from there to all the world was Braj Bhakti, the mellows of Vrindavan. So immersing himself more in remembrance of Krishna and finding reciprocation deeper in that remembrance than it was, then gradually those jagged peaks of the Himalayas transmuted into beautiful golden domes. Those deep ravines became the beautiful roads of Dwarka with their golden gates. And these sages of the Himalayas transmuted into his, and his loneliness dissipated as he began seeing the jadus, conversing with them, embracing them on the road to the backdrop of waves crashing on the beach in Dwarka. And as the crescendo which resounded above all the Vedic hymns was the rumbling of a chariot wheels And he looked up into the smiling face of his friend who extended his hand. Uddhava, where were you? I was looking all over for you. Were you hiding from me? And Uddhava was saying, where was I? Do we have to go to Vrindavan right now? And off they went. So, and the gopis, at that time Uddhava underwent what we all go through at some time, all our anguish, every devotee with his own unique history, it's all resigned to the land of dreams, because where were we? So, the gopis consigned their sacred bodies to the soil, forming the lake at Siddhashram. And the disappearance of Baladev, the abduction of the queens who were all screaming and pleading to Arjuna for protection as they were dragged off into the jungle. The paralysis of Arjuna, who was humiliated by the mocking, taunting words of those gopas. He said, you can't even protect these women. The humiliation Arjuna felt when he actually finally reached Hastinapura, and the news had preceded him, and everyone knew that the great Arjuna, whose Gandiva bow empowered him to cross that great ocean filled with so many dangers at Kurukshetra, he couldn't even protect the queens. He couldn't even string his Gandiva. He called for his other weapons. They refused to come. He remembered his divine arsenal, but he forgot the mantras. And then he realized, when Krishna left, he took opulence, power, glory, morality with him. So he too, with his... And Arjuna, I mean, before that, he just wanted to commit suicide repeatedly, but Daruka reminded him, no, we have a mission. So, these are all stage effects leading up to the disappearance of the Jadu dynasty, because Krishna was thinking after the war, then he went to encourage Yudhisthira because he was so sorrowful. He went to console the surviving Kurus who lost so many family members. He went back to Vrindavan to be with the Brijabasis. But then he was thinking, I've relieved the world of the burden of the demoniac, but there's still one very heavy burden, Jadus. And there's only one person who can remove that burden from the earth. Because in time they'll become proud and they'll be unobstructed by anyone. So, what was it, 640 million Jadus perished in that fight? And the blood flowed like rivers? Is it horrible? Special effects. On the stage at the grand finale as the curtain is falling to Krishna's Prakat Lila. And Arjuna, after that total humiliation, was thinking, he told me, I'm not manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. I'm covered by that curtain of Yogamaya. I will go through the curtain. And his brothers, and Subhadra, and Draupadi, followed in their own ways their husbands as they ascended the Himalayas. And then Krishna's words resounded in Arjuna's heart with more pertinence than ever before. Manmana bhavama bhakto majadinam namaskara mame vaishasi satyante patitana priyasana. He meditated on those words until he again saw the smiling face of his Gopa friend. Remember? I told you. Do not fear. Remember me. But there's two verses in Bhagavad Gita, one in the 9th and one in the 18th chapter. They have the same first two lines, Manmana Bhava Madhbhakto Majjati Manmasta, slightly different third and fourth lines. Is it repetitive? Redundant? One verse means that Krishna is telling us to always remember him. The other, he's telling us that he always remembers his devotees. So today, we're observing Vrindavan's Radha Kund's 30th birthday. But it's beyond Aristotelian logic how Radha Kund can manifest in West Virginia. Because Srila Prabhupada carried Vrindavan in his heart like a deity. And he could install Braj anywhere he so desired. And we thank you all for coming and sharing with us your realizations imbued with years and decades of practice and humility and sacrifice and austerity, which give potency to your words and your chanting, and touches the heart and purifies that mirror so that Cheto Dharpana Marjana Bhava Maha Devanti Mirabhava. And when we actually develop genuine humility, then we can chant the holy name of the Lord 24 hours, forever. Because there will be such a taste of Krishna's reciprocation in these songs, in the song, which is the crescendo of all Vedic mantras. It's not a mantra, really. A mantra is an assemblage of, you know, Sanskrit words, which are, which includes an invocation to the Lord who is as yet inaccessible. The Mahamantra is the Lord dancing with his beloved in the sounds of their names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? I've never heard that he actually made it. I'm not saying he didn't. Okay. I just never heard that he did. Well, no, he became a blade of grass, which from one perspective would be Shantaras, but from another perspective there's no Shantaras in Braj. And whatever the ras in Braj, everyone and everything is at least tinged with Madhurya. Because, you know, we used to, you know, years ago or decades ago, we introduced this concept of transcendental competition. That, okay, you know, you're collecting funds for Krishna, and I'm collecting funds for Krishna, and whoever collects the best gives Krishna more pleasure, so you compete more vehemently. But it didn't really bear the fruit of, you know, humility and sweet relationships that is characteristic of, you know, proper understanding. Transcendental competition means if I'm trying to achieve a result and you're trying to achieve the same result, and I see that you're doing better, I become your servant. This comes from Braj, where, you know, we use words like, you know, the gopis were jealous or sometimes even envious, but there's no enmity to it. It's a play they put on for Krishna's pleasure to act like, you know, but they see that nobody can please Krishna as Srimati does, so we will just assist her and her servants. So Uddhava attained the position of servant of the servant of the servant as a blade of grass in Braj, which is vastly higher than the cousin, counselor, courtier who would give advice to Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka. Yes, he attained his cherished aspiration, becoming a blade of grass. Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.